When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Wales in real trouble here, although they're lucky to get that loose ball. Gibbs with the thrust. Robert Jones, nicely out to Emir Lewis. Emir Lewis's chip up goes Ian Evans. Ian Evans is away. Can the Welsh captain make it? He's going to do it. And it's a try for Wales. And the Welsh captain has scored his 8th and his 33rd international.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Wales are one game away from the Grand Slam, and who'd have thought we'd have been saying that at the start of this? And joining me are the men who've been with me the whole of this Six Nations journey. It's the mighty Murph. How are you, Murph?
Good, mate. Thanks, yeah. Waiting for the Jam Slam.
Oh, we're all waiting for the Jam Slam. And the man who believed all along, and the man who is very much the epitome of the daffodil hat wearing pink cowboy hat, fair weather contributor to this podcast. It's Dan Killick. Hi, Dan.
Thanks for that, Jed. Lovely intro. I'm very good. Yeah, really good.
Right, I'm going to jump straight into this, boys, because we've had some questions come in from listeners, as we always do, particularly after the internationals. This one, we've had basically the same question from Robin and from Paul Price. Grand Slam, yes or no? Murph.
Well, I mean, yes. And I mean, I got serious doubts about our ability to beat France away. But you've got to say yes now, because I mean, there's no point in this, the way this championship's gone for us, there's no point in doubting anymore, is there? Even when we're, probably a little bit outgunned against Ireland and what have you, someone gets sent off and we win anyway. So, you just got to say yes. And, fingers crossed next week.
Dan?
Yes, it's I suppose the hesitation from me and Murph not both jumping in is probably says a lot, doesn't it? It's on, but it's going to be a difficult game, isn't it? I do think we can do it. I think we can do it, yeah. What about you?
I think it helps massively that France have lost, if I'm honest. I think that, it's if a slam or even a potential slam is on the line for them, I just think the intensity level is that much higher. Yes, they'll be looking to come back and bounce back and avenge the defeat, but I do think it helps that they've lost. I do. And that'll give us a good chance. I wasn't one of these going into the game where they played England thinking, oh, we could win it on points difference or any of this bollocks. Like, it's slam or nothing, isn't it? Like, you can't go into the final game and go, oh, we've lost by 6 points, but we still won the title. Like, that's the English way of winning it. That doesn't count. If you go into the final game with a slam on the line and you win the title but don't win the slam, the title is a real consolation prize in those scenarios, isn't it? And you tell me any of those players would come out and, be ecstatic about lifting the trophy. It's just all about the slam. And how brilliant to them, that they've got themselves into this position where one game away from doing it, one really good performance away from doing it. And I think that's the big if, is I'm still like that. Actually, I thought they were really, really professional yesterday, Wales. In fact, probably the best performance I've seen from a Wales side in Rome since 05, maybe. I think it was probably better than any of Gatland's efforts out there, other than the one where we did put a load on them, didn't we, one year?
Yeah, when we needed to score a bucket load of points and we just...
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So it's probably, you know, that one and 05 are the ones where we've gone to Rome and done a convincing job. Because a lot of the time it's been, you know, it's been pretty turgid stuff out there. And, but yes, they just had it in the bag and they were really clinical and ruthless and played some nice stuff. So there was plenty in there. Italy are poor. I don't think there's any denying that then. But they've got good players, you know.
Yeah. I think they just need a defence coach myself, proper defence coach, because they have got a style of play going on and their set piece can work at times, but they're just leaking points all over the place. I mean, I don't know what the situation is with Franco Smith, whether he's under pressure of his job or what have you, but I would break the bank on, I don't know who's around, but I'd break the bank on a top defence coach and they're not going to suddenly start winning the tournament. But they're going to stop being the whipping boys, especially, I mean, well, they're averaging 40-odd points a game.
And they haven't won a game in 7 years, you know. Yeah, and look, or in my, you know, I can't remember them looking like winning a game during that time. There probably is a couple of occasions where they come close, but that's, yeah.
At the moment, just losing by 20 would be a start.
Yeah, and I think they could do that by being a lot more tactical. They could half the points that they're losing by, couldn't they, by being wiser? Because they're playing more rugby. But I think because they're playing more rugby, they're making more errors, aren't they?
Yeah. And you know, it will be a bit of a bit of slow progress, I imagine. But the thing is, I think the frustrating thing from their point of view is that they have got real good young talent in there. And we've seen the under-20s go well. And I think it was right at the start of the tournament that Franco Smith said, the frustrating thing is that going from under-20s to international is such a big jump that you need some stepping stone in between. And but I think, you know, it's not like we're going to see promotion or relegation anytime soon. So they're going to be there. And I just hope they make progress, because it would be so much better to watch games that you know they're going to be competitive in. Because right now they don't look like taking any of the sides, even to the last 20 minutes of a game.
No. I mean, the thing is, I'm not down with this promotion relegation thing, because they proved at the World Cup they're better than all the other tier two teams. Mm. Whenever they play Georgia, they win. Not, you know, they don't hammer them, but they always win. They haven't lost. I don't know what the history is between the two nations, but I can't remember them ever losing a game to Georgia. So anyone who says Georgia should be in, you know, maybe it'll take off in that country, and maybe, you know, like it did initially when Italy started and they had a good side and they were winning games regularly. Maybe that would give Georgia a bounce. I don't know. But anyone who says Georgia should be in now doesn't realise that Italy beat them all the time.
Yeah, I think the only argument is one on meritocracy, that you say that the bottom team has to face a playoff against the top from that side. But I mean, it's not going to happen, let's be honest. It's not going to happen. A, the gulf is still too big. I mean, imagine Georgia in some of these games. Like, it would be so turgid and horrible to watch. And they'd still lose every game anyway. So A, the gulf is really, really big. But like, again, B, when this Six Nations is getting more and more commercial, and we've seen it this week with CVC finally announcing their introduction into that tournament. I mean, just imagine a fluke year where Scotland or Wales or Ireland or England got relegated. You know, it would hammer them commercially. So it's just not going to happen, I don't think. So it's pointless talking about it. Well, we spent a good 5 minutes talking about Italy there, which I wasn't anticipating doing. But yeah, anyway, there we go. What stood out for you though, Dan? Any particular facets of play that caught your eye in the victory over Italy?
Yeah, I thought it was a really impressive performance. First half was exceptional. First 20 was right up there with some of the best rugby I think we've seen from, you know, from Wales. Yes, Italy were poor, but you know, we've struggled against them, as you pointed out earlier. We struggled against them regularly, haven't we? To make a good game of it. And we were just really on the money. I thought, you know, we were trying things as well, kind of like what New Zealand do in some of the lesser games. We took our tries, scoring tries for fun, aren't we? And you know, looking really good with it as well. And the forwards, you know, the forwards play is just almost like revolutionary, really, isn't it? Lineouts going so well, set piece. I mean, our sort of driving, you know, our driving line out play is something to, you just got to work. You just got to bow down to it. Really, it's phenomenal. It just makes everything so much easier. So, yeah, I thought first 40 was a real masterclass, and then the second half was a little bit scrappy, but to be expected. Really, I think a big part of that is concentration. I know we made the changes, but I think we've made changes and we've got better in other games. I think it's concentration. When you're winning the game that comfortably, you just switch off naturally.
Murph is running an inside line, screaming for the ball here. So yeah. let's sling it over.
I'm popping it up to you now, Murph. Here we go.
There's a couple of things I got excited over. You said there. One was the driven line out. That we never had one under Gatland. No. I think the only time it was ever useful was when every back in the team joined in. So the fact that it was never a thing under Gatland, it must have been ignored. It must have been something he wasn't bothered with, but. Now it's developed into such a weapon. It's that type of thing where you can grind through games when the backs are not going well, and you know, and it's just easy points. Like, you know what I mean? The other one was that you mentioned the try scoring and the clinical nature of it all. There was two disallowed. They would have been given against the English.
I know. And who says we get all the luck? Eh? Who says we get all the luck?
I mean, one was only a yard forward.
One was a yard forward, and his foot grazes the touchline there. But
the other thing I wanted to bring up, I think I've covered all I want to say about the Italy game. Really, is Corey Hill almost scored the try of the tournament. It was like it seemed to be like three completely speculative offloads. Just like there might be someone there, I'm just going to throw it.
Yeah,
kind of thing. And they all went to hand. The next thing you know, Corey Hill is. I don't know, you've caught like a yard short of the line, but that would have been properly on the showreel of someone if that had been scored.
I was just going to say, if I was going to take the inside ball back off you again now, because it's kind of like, this is kind of a little bit like the Welsh play yesterday, isn't it? The offloading, I thought, was really impressive. We were obviously listening to the calls, had the confidence as well, just to pop it back inside. And you know, I'm sure, obviously we'll move on to next weekend's game, but I think the offloading is going to be key against France. And it was just so good, you know, so good to see, wasn't it? We were catching them, making it so difficult. You mentioned Corey Hill there. I thought he had an outstanding game. Really, yeah. Really clever game from him.
He is such a good player. Like, honestly, I know I bang on about it so much and I'm still in love with him, but he's so good. Like, he's worked so hard to just get better and better and better. And, you know, when he was released by Cardiff and came to the Dragons, it would have been very easy to sit there in mediocrity. But when he got that first call up to Wales, he's worked harder and harder and harder. And it's all about that attitude and leadership. And Gatland rated him really highly. And, you know, obviously Cardiff were desperate to get him back. But I just don't think he disappoints at the international level. I think he's such an underrated player in international rugby. I really, really do think he's a class act.
That performance by him means he'll stay in the 23. Adebeard will come back and he'll stay in the 23. And that means that was probably Jake Ball's last game for Wales yesterday.
Yeah, it's 50th as well, wasn't it? So yeah,
nice way to finish, really.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, actually, so it's a bit of a mad situation, isn't it? That he's obviously he's basically got to curtail his Wales career to go and meet his latest child. It's a bit, it's a strange one, but yeah, a good sign off for him. But I mean, these things are just such a polar contrast to where we were in the autumn. When the line out wasn't firing, we were looking at second rows going, God, you know, why is it not working? And why can't we have a decent set piece? And all of these things are clicking now. And it's one big performance away from a Grand Slam.
I know. Mental. It's just Welsh rugby, isn't it? We've done it loads of times, we come off of the first season of Gatland dumped out of the World Cup by Fiji, straight into the Grand Slam.
And hammered by England in that first half as well. And lucky to stay in the game. What were we, 12 points down at halftime? Very lucky to stay in the game at that
point. Away
away at Twickenham. And then the second half comeback. And then after that got better and better. But this is it, is, you know, as much as we were moaning, or certainly I was moaning, I think Murph was joining in weeks one and two, it's always been about what you can do to back it up. And even the England game, huge slices of fortune. But that bit of form that I saw in the last 20 against England, that's the bit that leads you to believe that this side can go on and do things. Yesterday, yeah, fine. They slotted Italy, who were, you know, were pretty lackluster, and they looked good doing it. I think they had a lot of fun chucking the ball around and scoring that many tries. Who wouldn't? But yeah, I mean, again, the acid test comes against France. If they can pull together a really big performance showing the best pieces that we've seen in that last 20 against England and some of those offloads you saw against Italy, then geez, it's on big time.
I'm really interested to see what tactics we go with against the French as well, because I think yesterday, again, I know, you know, Italy didn't play badly, but we came out of the block so well, didn't we? We were so quick with everything. There was a real intensity and speed and dynamism to everything we did that it just really shocked the Italians. And quite often we've come out against them fairly slowly and then let them sort of come into the game a little bit. It's been, oh God, you know, another classic sort of Wales-Italy game. How many times have we said that?
Yeah,
but we were just really up for it, weren't we? Really positive with the play, and we're
very good at getting dragged down to their level in the past.
Yeah, we have been, haven't we? Yeah,
it just didn't happen yesterday. So
it's like, you know, as you know, I like a forced sporting metaphor in here, and I think playing against Italy a load of times, it's been like a heavyweight boxing bout where Italy have, yeah, like you say, have dragged you into a really nerdly, lots of clinches and rabbit punches and you can't really express yourself. And yesterday just went out and blitzed them with really fast jabs and hooks from round one. And they're on the back foot and they never recovered. You know, if that was boxing, the ref would have stopped it after 15 minutes.
It's good to have a boxing analogy on the weekend that Marvin Hagler suddenly died.
Mate, I hadn't even heard that.
Yeah, really sad. Yeah, 66. I thought he was older than 66.
Legally, his name was Marvin Marvis Hagler.
Yeah.
It genuinely changed that. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Oh, God.
He was marvellous, properly marvellous. I mean, the proper heyday of all boxing, I would say. Well, probably a historian would know better, but in that period, why are we talking about boxing all of a sudden? That period with Hagler, Hearns, and Sugary Robinson, even, you know, like the blokes below them would probably dominate now. Like there was people like Alan Minter and was it a Welsh guy who fought him? Or was that after? Anyway. It's because six or something I know.
Well, this is the beauty of doing a podcast where we sit here drinking beer, is you can wander off on these little... I mean, imagine a radio producer listening to this. Going, why are you talking about boxing?
I'd be out of my ass. I haven't even had a drink. I haven't got a drink. You two have. I haven't gone.
Oh, there we go. But anyway, yeah, look, I think it's probably about... The only other thing I wanted to touch on from the Italy game, because I'm just getting more and more obsessed with this kid, is like Lewis Rees-Samit looks like a school kid who is just that much better than, or that much quicker than everyone else on the pitch. Like it is like he's been drafted in for, do you know what? It reminds me of Nigel Walker when Nigel Walker played some of those games for Cardiff. When you go, you know, we've said about Lewis Rees-Samit, he's got sprinter's pace. Nigel Walker was a genuine Olympic hurdler. You know, and Lewis Rees-Samit looks that much quicker than international players 25 years later. It's incredible. He took the ball facing his own try line, pirouetted, and coasted in for that try without needing to hit top gear. The guy's nuts.
Nigel Walker actually looked like he was hurdling when he was running, though, didn't he? that's the difference.
he seems to be Lewis Samet now. He seems to be easing down all the time.
Yeah, like, he does.
He gets going, and then it's like it's effortless after that. He's just coasting the whole way, and people are getting further away from him as he's easing down, if you know what I mean, as he's cruising up to the line with about 30 yards to go. He's taking his foot off, but everyone is still trailing away in his wake. So yeah, I think in commentary they had said something, it would be interesting to see if he actually had to push it.
I would,
you know, pushed him that he had to run properly. I can't remember what it was. Someone said we haven't seen him in fifth gear yet.
Yeah, I think it might have been Miles Harrison, wouldn't it? But it's exactly that. And while we're forcing the chat about other sports, it's like it's like he's, you know the heat in the Olympics when you're going through and you see that one sprinter in there who's that much quicker than everyone else in the heats, and you've got, you know, a Dutch athlete in third who's busting a gut to get through as fastest loser. And Lewis Rees-Samit is there easing up, running sub 20 times in a 200 meters. He's what an athlete. What an athlete he is.
Yeah. He's got like a choppy sort of a stride. It reminds me of Michael Johnson. He was all kind of...
very upright, yeah.
Yeah, very, and all, what's the word I'm looking for? All heels. He wasn't raising his knees very high, like you might see with Chariots of Fire or something like that, training on the beach and all that, but you know that style.
There's a reference for the kids.
Yeah, another one for the kids, yeah. Yeah, you just got a choppy stride. So maybe that's one of the reasons why he doesn't look like he's flat out all the time. I don't know. But you could tell he'd be naturally quick, whatever. But also, in this era, he's had all the conditioning put into him and the sprint training and whatever else they do. And he just look like when he stood still, he looks like he can shift. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just that he's so quick off the mark that he can take a ball facing his own try line. Pirouette, bang, he's away. I just, yeah, absolutely fascinated with him. Right, we got heaps more to talk about, and we're going to do that. But first, we're going to take a very, very quick break. Right, boys, going to throw to another listener's question now. And while we're talking about a bit of X Factor talent with regards to Lewis Rees-Zammit, we have had this question in from Jonathan Davis. Is George North really our X Factor outside centre? I thought he was spectacular again. I think he looks like the George of old to me. What do you reckon, Dan?
Yeah, he's playing really well, isn't he? I think he's playing some of the best rugby we've seen from him, in all honesty, and in a position where it's really difficult. You know, it's such a difficult move for him to come in, the centre, and he's making it look easy. It sounds a little harsh, but I'm expecting him to make an error, particularly sort of, you know, defensively, and he hasn't made one yet. He hasn't made a significant one. His reads with Jonathan on the weekend, I thought, were fantastic, because it's not easy to do that, is it? It's a new center partnership. They look really, really comfortable together, but also I think that they're only going to get better as well as that goes on. And again, we've got to take our hats off to the coaches, haven't we, for making a really, really bold, you know, bold change there, which, you know, has been questioned, and, you know, probably a lot of other coaches wouldn't have made it, and they've made it. And, you know, Pivac, Stephen Jones, they've done it. And yeah, he looks really sharp, and he looks to be enjoying his rugby, doesn't he? Looks so comfortable.
There's been a flirtation in the past, hasn't it? We've all thought, like, you know, we've seen glimpses. I don't know if you remember, there was a game about 2014 in the autumn. Autumn 2014 against Australia, where he went to 13 like early on in the second half, and he terrorized them. He gave them a real, you know, a real hard ride. Obviously we lost, but he looked to give their defense a real tough time. And the whole time I've been thinking, God, you know, if you just harness that with George North at 13. But I, like many others, thought, oh, well, that ship sailed, you know, just, yeah, keep him on the wing, keep him where he's playing well, and hopefully he'll get back to a bit of form. I think he's looked spectacular at 13. What do you reckon, Murph?
Yeah, I never thought he had the hands for 13. But he's just proved that this season. And I think one of the criticisms of him when he was playing on the wing was that he would kind of disappear in games and go quiet and not be involved enough. Well, that's cured now, because he's in the middle of it all the time. And I think we're in transition a little bit from the end of like Hadley Parks and Jonathan Davis as a partnership. So I don't know if Jonathan Davis is going to be long term as 12. I don't think he's always hated it. He's never wanted to play 12. But it could be the situation where he got no choice now, because I don't know if he's physically what he was after two massive knee problems.
Yeah.
So it could be, because George is only obviously 28. It could be that he's there for a few more seasons, but it might be that Jonathan Davis isn't. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. Willis Halaholo is there as well now. So we'll see. But they're both going to start next week.
I do feel like there's a lot more option now within the centres. And, you know, I mean, obviously, George has been an international quality player since the moment he set foot on a pitch, you know, two tries in his debut, and he's, you know, he looked completely at home. But the fact that he's able to kind of take that into 13, and I think this, you know, I think that will be the long-term position for him. And
what I didn't get around to saying was he wouldn't get in the side as a winger now.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't.
So, you know, if he doesn't get in a 13, he probably would make the bench either, because he would make the bench these days because he covers two positions.
He covers two, yeah.
Yeah, but he probably doesn't get on as a winger. So that's where his future is, I think.
I think also with George North as well, it's just by having him in the side, in the centre, it changes the way in which the other sides have to face us. Mm-hmm. Because if he takes the ball, he's a serious threat, you know, on the outside and the inside. And if he doesn't take the ball, he sucks in players as well. So he's a really difficult person to defend with the ball, but also without the ball. And I think it's really benefiting Wales at the moment. Plus, you add in then the dominance that our forward pack's having. He's getting ball in space. And if he has a little bit of a runner, he's away, isn't he?
He is, so, but beautifully as well, Dan. Like, for so long, I think we saw George just running to contact so much, because obviously he's a big physical guy and he can break tackles. But when he's playing his best rugby, like particularly around like 2012, 13, he was looking to hit space. And if he hits, like you say, if he just gets a little bit around the outside of you, you're not stopping him, because not only is he really strong, he's such a brilliantly balanced runner. In fact, like, he looks a lot more graceful when he runs than Lewis Rees-Sammet does. Like, he looks like his feet like graze the floor. And
yeah, he moves so well.
If you don't get him, his handoff will keep you miles away. And that's the thing that I'm really pleased with. He's looking for space. He's looking to get round people. And like Murph said, he's got, you know, some offloads and some passes to him. So I think he's, you know, to say it's only I don't know, maybe it's like the 10th game he started at 13 in his international career, and we've got a good few years of him. Yeah, it's a very exciting prospect.
Interesting to see if he moves there for his club.
Well, it is actually, and they're not sure. I mean, the thing is that the Ospreys, they're not short of centres actually, are they? Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. Kieran Williams looks a really good prospect at 12. Owen Watkin plays 12 and 13.
Tian Thomas Wheeler.
They are
short of wingers.
They are short of wingers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, maybe we'll see Hanno Dirksen on the wing again, and George will be pushed inside, playing for another contract. But yeah, I know. I've been really impressed with George. I think he's looked great. Let's stick with the centres. This one is from Gareth Davis. With France seemingly weaker in the last 20 minutes, is there any changes to the starters? Would you consider Halaholo starting with North coming on fresh, for example? I mean, I wouldn't entertain dropping North out of the 15. You boys?
No, it's too much experience to give away by bringing in Willis, even if he's setting the world alight. He's still in such a big game, you'd probably still go with the experienced guy. And at the moment, he's doing wonders off the bench. So, it's if it's not broke, don't fix it. Obviously, Adam Beard probably comes back. And who else did they change? There's another change in the team.
You might have a choice to scrum off,
Yeah. So that would probably stay the same. Maybe Thomas Williams makes the bench, but you're in a position where you don't need to fix anything. So going forward, you know, over time, then I think Halaholo might end up as a regular 12, but not for next week. It's no point.
Daniel?
Yeah, I wouldn't change. I wouldn't change the start any of the centres really for Halaholo to start. I'd keep him on the bench. Pressure's off him then when he comes on, and you know he's going to make some sort of a contribution, isn't he, when he comes on? But no, for me, keep it exactly the same in the centre partnership there.
All right, let's stick with team selection, because for me, actually, it's pretty straightforward. But let's field this one from Robert Giannotti. If Thomas Williams is fit next week, does he come straight back into the starting lineup, or has Gareth Davis done enough? Murph, you're a man who watches Gareth Davis like a hawk.
Do I?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan.
No, I know you are. That's it. You've often banged the drum and said, you know, just how big an impact he made at the 2019 World Cup. Yeah, and yeah. What do you think? Is it, you know, I thought he had a much better game than he's had for a while, actually, for either club or country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whatever you think of the way he played on Saturday, he's the only one who's fit. Lloyd Williams came in. And like I say, if Thomas Williams is, even if Thomas Williams is fit, is there any point in rushing him back? So
no, there's not. And, you know, if Thomas had stayed fit for like the first three games and had put in great performances, you know, and I thought he was quite bright in that first half against Ireland, but then pulling a hammy then and sitting out the next three games, it's not like he's been able to put together a clear run of form. So I think you have to go Gareth Davis with Thomas off the bench, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would almost be madness to change the nine. I really do. I'm disappointed that Hardy's not there. I think that's a real shame. But yeah, you know, Gareth to start for me for sure.
I've got to say, I've got no idea who Gatland's going to pick as nines for his tour, wherever it happens. I mean,
There is a bit of a development on that front, Murph. I don't know if you saw those screen grabs doing the round of a provisional tour in the UK that seemed to be around on Twitter on Friday afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
The more I hear, the more they might well be genuine, actually. I think that's certainly I think it's becoming the favourite outcome.
But when it happens, I still can't, because the injuries and the form book and the transition of people like Conor Murray being phased out of the Irish team. And I mean, Ben Youngs probably goes and starts the tests after what I've said about him. I just can't work out. Who is the form nine in the tournament?
I tell you what, I haven't, as we said before on air.
I know the form nine, sorry, it's Antoine Dupont, but he doesn't qualify. So just to make sure we're on the right page, he is clearly the best nine in the tournament, but he's not. He can't play for the British Lions, unfortunately.
I tell you who I've been impressed with up until this point in the tournament, and I haven't seen the Scotland game today for various boring reasons, but is our mate Tommy Price Ali Price. Yeah. How did he go today? I thought in a couple of the games, you know, the Wales and England game, I thought he advanced his claims quite drastically, actually. How did he fare today?
Do you want to take that down on me?
Yeah, you take that, mate.
He was okay. I wouldn't necessarily say he outplayed Jameson Gibson Park, though. And he did, compared to other nines in the tournament, he doesn't actually make that many meters. He doesn't make many line breaks, but he's busy and tactically good. I mean, Ben Youngs makes more breaks. That's all I'm saying. what I just said there is why I can't work out who's going.
Like, Ben Youngs will go for sure, and I think realistically, Gareth Davis has an opportunity next week to cement his place as well. Yeah. And all it takes is one of those. I mean, I don't know how many times I've watched Gareth Davis play rugby and I've been slagging him off for 20 minutes going, that's brainless, that kick. This is so dull. And then he'll make a break out of nothing and score a try, or he'll make an intercept and score a try that wins the match in the first half. You know, he is a big game player. And I do think that sometimes we don't give him credit for how many big performances he's put in.
What you said there, he's done this season against Scotland. Was it Scotland at home in the second round? Where we had Ireland? I can't remember which game. Anyway, we had
Ireland at home, round one, Scotland away, round two.
Yeah, and all he had to do was keep possession, kicked it away, and ended up playing 5 minutes after the...
That was Ireland, yeah.
Yeah. So he's prone to, you know, a brain fart, as it were. Mm. But, you know...
But again, you know, Gatland rates him. You know, he rates him for sure. And he knows he plays in big games. As much as I've been... As I was saying, I've been impressed by Ali Price. again, Gatland looks at form at the in big games, and Gareth Davis has got stacks of it. Australia World Cup last year, South Africa in the World Cup in 2015, England in the World Cup in 2015. The guy doesn't tend to bottle big moments. He puts in big performances, and so I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the tour if he has a big game against France. You know, we know he's got big match-winning performances in him. Outside of that, again, I think Jameson Gibson-Park's got a sniff. I think, again, not having seen his performance today, but I think he's the kind of player Gatland likes. You know, he's combative. He's got good all-round skills. He's a Kiwi. He's got lots going for him, I think. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the mix. And then, yeah, I think Ben Youngs will definitely be on the plane or the bus or whatever, or the biosecure bubble, whatever it is.
What are they going to call it? I don't know what they're going to call it. On the train, I don't know.
Yeah, or driving his own car to the match, to the venue,
driving separate from everyone else in a bubble to the game.
Yeah, right, there we go. We've still got a couple more questions to get through as well. Let's have a look at this one from Madeley Academy, Duke of Edinburgh. I don't know if this is related to Richard Madeley or not. Let's assume, for the sake of this, it is. We hope, of course, that Wales win the Grand Slam next Saturday. But if that doesn't happen, how annoying is it that France-Scotland game has to be decided to decide who comes on top? I mean, I've had my thoughts on that. I'd actually rather a week where I can watch a game of rugby that decides whether we get the consolation prize or not. That gives me something to play for the following week, if you see what I mean. Because I just think it's just all about the slam, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it is. But I mean, whatever happens, we take it, wouldn't we, from where we were? It's just incredible. I mean, it really is astonishing, isn't it, where we find ourselves at the moment. And yeah, look, I really want the slam. Of course I do. But it's just so, you've got to admit, there's a great feel-good factor around, isn't there, now? And so much competition for places. We seem to be, I think one of the most exciting things is as well, we haven't put in the complete performance yet. I don't feel, anyway. And we seem to be getting...
We definitely haven't. We haven't put in the complete performance with all the games combined, I think, which is amazing to be 4 from 4. And that's it. That's I think is the really exciting bit, is if they can pull out a really big performance next week, it's there. It's completely on. I'm way more excited than I ever anticipated being.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're all feeling great about it, aren't we? So, yeah, it's all about the Grand Slam. But I think at the same time, you know, the Welsh players, coaching staff, everyone involved has given us all a massive lift, and it's super exciting. And I'm incredibly excited about this game. I think it's going to be a monster. And yeah, I'm intrigued to hear where you boys think we can take them on, to be honest.
I just
question of my own.
Yeah, got Murph, you've lived through more Welsh rugby misery than any of us. so this one really should be over to you.
I'm just going to say, unless I've misread the table, I know everyone just wants the Grand Slam and that's the end of it. But in reality, we might have to start with just winning the championship. And to win the championship, France needs a maximum point, us and Scotland, because there's a 9-point gap, I think. Unless maybe I was looking at the table before today's game.
No, I think you might be right, actually. In fact, the wonders of modern technology, I might even get that up in front of me now.
But, you know, they need a bonus point, us, and then do the same to Scotland. And then they'd be on 20 and we'd be on 9. If we get any point out of France, like a losing bonus point or whatever kind of point out of it, the championship's ours. And I mean, yeah, I'd rather a Grand Slam. But what I don't want to do is miss the Grand Slam and then lose the championship altogether as well. Call me old-fashioned.
The Triple Crown. The Triple Crown is great, right? That in a way would mean more to me than a championship earned on a bonus point.
Yeah, well, yeah, but, you know...
Because it's the same thing almost, isn't it?
The, was it 95? We lost I think.
Yeah, it was 95. We lost away at Twickenham on the last day.
You could see the players weren't happy at all.
No.
But then they went and lifted a trophy. And in the record books, as I'm fond of saying, we won the championship in 1995. And no one remembers that we, on the last day, we ballsed up a Grand Slam. They just
I think everyone remembers that, don't they? I definitely remember. Well, I've never been heartbroken at that point.
We do, yeah, we do. But, you know, as time goes on...
Whereas if you look at, I just think it's so different, like where you win, how you win a championship, because that 2013 one where we got hammered by Ireland on the opening day, but pumped England when they turned up on the final day. I was only interested in stopping the slam. I was like, I don't think we'll win the title, but stop the slam. And that's as good as a title win. And then to absolutely hump them by that level. I mean, that is probably better than any of the Grand Slams. I mean, for a sheer because of one day, I think that was as good as it gets.
Because of the circumstances as well of England coming down here with a really gung-ho, successful side. And I mean, tons of fans turned up and they were all full of themselves. And they just, I can remember people I know who were English were there and they were saying things like, yeah, but there's no fun if your team just don't turn up. Yeah, good. But going back to 95, it's you know, by all means we missed out on a Grand Slam, but that was our second trophy since my childhood. It was the 88 Triple Crown, the 95 Five Nations Championship. That's it. There was nothing else for me to remember, because I couldn't remember 78.
That was my first, because I didn't remember 88.
No,
And it should have been brilliant, but it just didn't. There's something about you lose to England at Twickenham when it's all on the line, and it just doesn't.
Yeah,
it just doesn't feel nice at all. And
no.
And I think that's what it'd feel like next week. But if you consider all the success that we've had, you know, in the last few years,
I'll be celebrating this. I'll tell you that if we get this championship,
I'm going to break into my local pub.
Why does it sound like that's not the first time you've done it? He knows exactly the loose window to Gemma.
I think I could definitely get into the beer garden, definitely.
With a crate from Tesco.
We'll be filming next week. Murph will be in the garden then.
Magic darts, right.
What were we saying?
I don't know, but you were right. France are 9 points behind us. Ireland are 8 points behind us. And who have they got left to play? England.
So well, they've only got one game left, so they can't catch us anyway.
No,
so.
They can't. Yeah, exactly. Fair point. Anyway, right, we have got... Let's take it on to that game against France. So this one came in from Gary Mason, a.k.a. Gasman Roy. Can Wales cope with a French flair, speed and power? Dan.
Whew, that's a big one, isn't it? Yes, I think we can, but we're going to need, our tactics are going to have to be, absolutely spot on. And I think there's a few areas really that we can target the French side. So I think they're prone to making a few mistakes if we put up some contestable kicks. But if we don't contest them, then it's they're so dangerous, aren't they, with ball in hand, that it could well be game over from that point. So it's literally got to be our kicking game's got to be absolutely on the money. Otherwise, yeah, they'll turn us around. I think our driving lineout's going to, we've really got to use that to frustrate them. I think if we can get them going backwards, get the forwards going backwards, get their backs going backwards as well, that'll have a big impact on the game. And I would be sending North and Jonathan Davis all down the 9 and 10 channel, just really pumping them down that channel quite early on, just to try and rock them a little bit. But they're frighteningly powerful, aren't they? But then they're incredible out wide as well. So it's going to be really difficult. But I do think there's some tactical things we could do. The kicks as well, the little dinks over the top. There's quite a bit of space. The way in which where the fullback sits is a little bit irregular to how, you know, how some of the other fullbacks position themselves. So there's things definitely we can do. And I thought against England, they made quite a few errors, actually.
While we're talking about fullbacks, though, we've got to talk about Bruce Doolan against England. I mean, like, I don't know, like, he was incredible at certain points. It was such a maverick performance. It's like meters gained 78, clean line breaks 3, outrageous drop goal attempts 1, number of fucks given 0. Like, the guy was just like, it seemed like you could have told him to do anything during that game and he completely ignored it. It's like someone had put Finn Russell's brain in him for that game. But again, you don't want to be kicking loose to him.
No,
you don't want to be kicking loose to him, but he's, I do think there's, you can move him around a bit with a really sharp kicking game. And I don't really think it was interesting to see the French when they were on the back foot a little bit. They did start to make some errors. I think they struggled a little bit with the offload when England started offloading the game as well. They got quite a bit of yardage as well when England went out wide. We've really got to hold our depth, hold our width, haven't we? Because they play it nice and tight, and when they shift it wide, they move it really quickly. But it's an obvious one, isn't it? But so much of it's around Dupont, isn't it? The way in which he feigns one way, then goes the other way, is so difficult to defend. Our back row, have been immense, and they are back row, possibly, you know, well, yeah, best back row of the tournament. But they've got to do a real number on him.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, this back row is, I mean, those players individually are phenomenal. But when you see them click as a trio, I think we said it before, he's man of the match again yesterday. But Navidi is so important because, like, we all know what brilliant players Tipperick and Faletau are, and they are, you know, they can put in massive performances by themselves. But just having a six who does everything like Navidi, he gets through so many tackles, he can turn ball over, he carries like a bastard, and he's so strong. I don't know, I just, he's so crucial to everything Wales do. We look a different side with him, innit?
Yeah. It's going to be so important as well, isn't he, against France as well, isn't he? Because they're big, big ball carriers. He tends to love the big guys, doesn't he? And so great that he got through a load of minutes again yesterday. You know, he's probably blowing hard, isn't he, during those games? But you know that he'll just come through that. And yeah, I think a lot rides on him, to be honest, against France. And yeah, I'm just really interested to see what tactics we go with against them. It's going to be a fascinating one.
Murph, any thoughts on what tactics will and should be employed against the French?
No, I don't. I haven't got a clue how to approach them, I'll be honest. I think what I'm looking forward to is there's some amazing matchups in there, like head to heads, if you like. So like George North is going to be facing back a tower.
Yeah,
that's going to. I don't want to get stuck in the middle of them. Both sets of wingers, our pair against their pair, is a hell of a matchup. Just all over the best attacking nine in the world versus possibly the best defensive nine in the world on the day. So on his form of last season, not necessarily this season's form. So yeah, just a mental game. I don't know. Well, I mean, tactically, England only just pulled it off at home. Obviously, they're not in their best form, but if England's only just beating you at Twickenham, you're doing something right. And I thought I was, as a massive French fan yesterday, I was screaming for Entomac to come on in the second half. It didn't change any of the backs. All backline played the full game. And I thought towards the end, Jalabert, great name, by the way, Matthew Jalabert, just sounds
boss. Beautiful. Yeah.
Just sounds like, it sounds like he was in the team in the 80s, doesn't he? Matthew Jalabert. It's like Carbonneau and all the other ones. Anyway, he got
a bit sloppy. Saying that about our names?
Yeah.
Murph.
No, not my first name.
I know your first name.
Well done. Anyway, what was my point? Yes, Jalibert, he got a bit sloppy tactically, I thought, in the second late on. And whereas, not that Entomac is an all dead by any means, but I think he would have been a bit wiser at the death because they, I mean, they were, what were they? 4 points up, 5 points up, 4 points up with minutes to go. And you just had to, I mean, you just had to put them in the corner and make them score from 90 metres out. And
I said this before we came on air. I'm still really surprised they didn't win that game. I thought that, you know, for all the, you know, the beautiful touches and the outstanding back moves and stuff like that, I thought they had them on toast at the breakdown. I thought, you know, there was some brilliant stuff, not just from the back row, but some of that counter-rucking from Penno was just, and it wasn't just that one incident. Like, I was like, that was...
How strong is he?
He's so really like deceptively strong.
Yeah, it's like real sort of innate power, isn't it? He gets his body so low and he...
It's the drive, isn't it?
Yeah, the leg power coming through. He's what a finisher as well.
Yeah. And I just can't believe they couldn't quite close that out. But you're right, even just bringing on fresh legs into that, you know, like into that scenario, you think that if Unterbach is fit, which he would be, He brings you something else, but he's also like he's not played that 60 minutes of rugby that the Jalibert has done.
Yeah, I mean, they went with a 6-2 split like England do, so there was only a pair of halfbacks to come on. So maybe Galtier was scared to use Entomac in case 2 seconds later a winger goes down injured. I don't know. Maybe that's what put him off. But I thought it was just screaming off like an outside half with fresh instructions from the bench to get on and just, I know they got a style of play and they're gonna go for it. But you're away to Twickenham, you're away to England, and you're in front with a few minutes to go.
Close the game out.
Yeah, just stick it in the corner.
I liked. I thought Curry was incredible.
He had his best game in an England shirt for quite a while, I think.
I did because he's always everywhere. But I just thought that was a different performance from him. His carrying was great, wasn't it? And he made a lot of yards, didn't he? Cutting back on some really clever lines. So I wanted to ask you boys if you thought, do you think we can take them on up front? Really have a go at them up front? It's not an obvious thing to say, but
I don't want to get into an arm wrestle with them. I think that our set piece has got better and better. And it looks like a really confident pack now. It looks settled and confident. And I think you're right. The areas I'd be looking to take them on up front would be driving line out. But I wouldn't want to be getting into an arm wrestle with them. I think we've just got to have our back row have a storming day at the breakdown. But they've, you know, the individuals are in there to do it. Navidi and Cypriot can do that. I wouldn't want to get into a complete slugfest up front.
Well, it the weather over there normally... Early spring, it'll be nice in Paris and everything. So I would imagine it'll be a running open game. I can't see it being up the jumper. But
I think that's where kicking's so important is, you know, you've got to play a really good, smart kicking game. You're right, Dan. Contestable kicks. Because again, we know like a bigger can field those like anyone in the world. And the back three that we're picking at the moment is really good under the high ball as well. All three of them can, you know, Rhys Ammitt with his sheer pace can get up and challenge. Liam Williams is as good as anyone in the world under the high ball. And Josh Adams, again, you know, played enough rugby at fullback and enough international rugby on the wing to really cause some problems there. So I think if we contest those kicks, then that's where I can see us getting some good change and some good territory.
Yeah, I'd like to think we could hopefully frustrate them if we keep it tight. So if we keep it really tight, don't allow them to, you know, to play the game they want to play. Because they haven't really been in that type of a game, have they? Where they've been really frustrated, and you just wonder whether we see a little bit of, you know, a little bit of more discipline coming through if they just can't get into it. If we, you know, keep hold of the ball, you know, little short carries, just literally winding them up with everything we do.
I think it's as important what we do when they've got the ball, though, because that's the thing that's been so impressive for me, actually, is how much that hideous defence of the autumn has become a very well-organized defense during the Six Nations. And I think that that's what's going to be so, so key, is if you can nullify some of that threat, great line speed, great positional play, frustrate them, their offloads start going to the deck and not to hand. And you're right, you've got a really frustrated back line and a young back line, and you're in their heads and you're completely in the game. But it's fascinating, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's a big if, isn't it? Because this, yeah, just if they didn't have DuPont, it's just so much easier, isn't it? With if you take him out, is there anything we can do there? But he is. Did you see that that run he had down the left hand side where you thought, right, he's going to be knocked into touch. We know how strong he is, but how on earth he stayed in and he shrugged off. I think it was Wilson, or it was a couple of English players anyway. And I thought he was going to score. He went towards the line. I know it's been said, I think Murphy, you said it a couple of weeks back, but the strength of the guy is something else as well, isn't it? I mean, we know what else he's got. He's just got the lot, but so much is going to be on our 9 and 10, isn't it, in this game? And I did think Bigger had a cracking game on for us in the East Italy.
I did, and I thought that pass in particular for Josh Adams to go over.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I know it looked a little bit ugly because he had to take like an extra step to get to it. But again, if that was like Cipriani or someone, everyone would be raving about that, because it put it on a plate for him, and there was a lot to do. Not on a plate, but it was perfectly executed pass. And so I was mighty impressed with Bigger, actually.
It's a funny thing there with the coverage. I think Dan Bigger threw that pass and it was really impressive. And then the game, the footage, the coverage just kind of moves on to the replay and the conversion, and then back onto the game. And it seems like if that was Callum Sheedy, or if that was Owen Farrell, it'd be a long lingering close up of one of those boys after they've thrown that pass. But because it's Dan Bigger, and we know that he's an established international player and all the other stuff, just kind of moves on. The coverage kind of, they don't really cover the fact that it was Dan Bigger throwing an amazing pass. Maybe I'm being, I don't know.
No, I've always thought it's a myth that Bigger is just a kicking 10 and he's good in defence and he's good under the high ball. Like his basic skills and his service are really, really good. But so often we deploy him as a kicking 10 because he's very, very good at that, and it suited the game plan. When he needs to and he gets front foot ball, he's done that, he's done that a number of times. And you watch him play for Northampton and particularly when they're playing well. And he does that a lot more. It's a bit like, do you remember when Johnny Wilkinson first went over to Toulon and he was taking the ball so much flatter, and you just realised actually how good he was at distributing, versus just kicking the ball and the stuff that we knew him for. And so I don't know. I just think I think he's a really underrated 10. Like when he goes, people will realize actually what a real top quality performer he was. Is.
Yeah, totally agree. Great play. Right.
Win or lose, Dan. Win, lose or draw. Slam. Is it on?
It's on. Slam.
Murph.
Is this our last question?
No, we've got another one. I was going to bring. I'm going to bring the mood down a bit.
I'm obviously slam. I mean, but I'm not confident at all.
Well, given that
this is we're facing the rising squad in world rugby. That's what they are. Like Martin, who was covering? Yeah, I think Martin Johnson today, or someone who was on today's coverage. Maybe it was Jamie Heaslip. Just said that. Give this side 18 months, because they're almost beating everyone now. But I think it was a bit of an experience yesterday, maybe a couple of different things. And they might be, I'm not going to say the dominant force, because you've got the Southern Hemisphere sides, but they're onto something this side.
I think we could well be looking at the 2023 World Cup winners, given that it's on home soil.
Yeah,
I do think that, and given that that's what, 2.5 years away, they'll have enough time to get that familiarity and that top experience.
Loads of the forwards were in the under 20 World Cup in 2018, like the pack on the bench, and loads of them were in the side that won the under 20 World Cup 3 seasons ago. So, I mean, they're still babies in international terms, and
with a bit more development, I just think. Anyway, hopefully next week they're still undercooked in terms of international experience, and we can sneak a Grand Slam before France dominate for the next 10 seasons.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Just before I make my prediction, I was I've got to that stage where every prediction I make, the opposite seems to happen. So for the first week last week, I suggested that England were going to lose, and they won. So I'm going to say that that France are going to win. Knowing full well that the slam
double
is on.
Bluff.
The old double bluff that the slam is on. But it's not the last question, because I've got to bring things down. We've had far too much fun on this because we haven't spoken about the Pro 14. But this question from Rugby 24/7, thoughts on the Pro 16 moving to Sky Sports? Is it a good move? Now, again, this is a bit of speculation, but according to that trusted news source, Wales Online, they are front runners to get the coverage for the Pro 16 next season. Anyone want to field that one?
Is this you, isn't it?
Is this a politics question? I'm not sure if I want to bother. Go on, Dan.
I'm throwing a pass straight over to you, Jen. This has got you written all over.
Oh, geez, this is like picking up a bobbling ball on your five yards from your own line, isn't it?
I will if I have to.
Is that a good thing? It's a good thing because it will be. Look, it's better than Premier Sports for a number of reasons. One, I think it's an increased revenue deal from what I've seen, which is good because you need more money coming in. Two, people have Sky Sports, like, you know, it's a thing. Premier Sports was like asking people to, you know, to go to the moon to watch it. It's, you know, it was nuts. The coverage was fine, but the on-demand service was clunky. No one had ever heard of it. They did nothing to promote the game. At least Sky Sports are big enough that they can advertise it to their own audience of however many people have Sky Sports, you know, six million people or whatever it is. So it's a positive in that regard. I'd rather the BBC got it because it'd be free to air coverage for everyone. But at the moment, like, this competition is not worth saving. Like, you know, the Pro 16, Pro 14, Rainbow Cup, whatever it is so crap that just get as much money out of it as you can until we can get a good tournament for the Welsh sides to play in, because it's rubbish. So, you know what I mean? Like, if we went back on BBC, I don't think all of a sudden everyone's going to be delighted and take a massive interest in Welsh regional rugby anymore. It's not as simple as that. So I think actually the best solution is to get it on an established network like Sky, get a bit more money for it, and hope that some interest, yeah, and hope the sides start playing well and we can have a bit more interest in it.
In fairness, I mean, they haven't got any rugby coverage now, aside from this season's Lions Tour, whatever it is. They haven't got the Southern Hemisphere stuff. They haven't got the English League. So they were doing top 14 for a while, weren't they? That's gone. So, I mean, again, they're good at promoting a game, so it could end up being good for us. Before we wrap up, I got to mention I missed Roberto Duran when I was talking about boxing. And also, I've gone through the whole episode without getting anyone's name wrong. Unless we listen tomorrow and realise I got some names wrong, but that's just what I wanted to finish on.
What a time to pull it. How long have you been sat on that for?
Definitely. I had to wait to the end. I had to wait to the end to see I haven't got any names wrong, because I got one wrong in the last 2 seconds.
There's a minor stewards inquiry that you said Carbonneau yeah, played in the 80s. Oh, Carbonneau, I remember playing. I don't know whether he's an 80s player or not, but that would be a minor, mate. You'd get away with that.
His era is one thing. His name was correct.
Yeah. So, Dan, anything more to add before we wrap up?
No, nothing on that. I mean, you covered it, but yeah, I think it's definitely a positive, isn't it? Premier Sport. I had it, and I still couldn't find it.
Yeah, Dan, I mean, Dan, that is not saying a great
thing. No, fair enough. Yeah, actually,
I have had the occasional distressed phone call from you, Gary, explaining how to put BT Sport 2 on.
Yeah. You've had many of them, haven't you?
I think I've had to come round on a few occasions.
I know, yeah. Yeah,
it's definitely a better thing.
I can't take that question. Yeah, it's definitely better than where it was, isn't it? But yeah, we're...
While we're on it, though, Premier Sports are still in between the... in between the Pro 14 games at the moment are still promoting this Rainbow Cup, saying coming in April. Like, is this actually on then? Like, because the season ends in a couple of weeks, doesn't it? So God knows, like, are we actually expecting to be hosting South African sides over here or what? It can't be happening, surely.
It's got implications for the Lions tour if there's an outbreak in one of those teams. Not that they couldn't all be fixed again but still, you know.
Maybe it's easier then. Maybe, in fact, that's part of it, is if they come over here where it's a lot easier to... Because infection rates are getting so low here, and there's a vaccine that's making that even lower. If you're going to have the Lions tour over here, maybe it makes sense to have them over here and just play all of their games in the British Isles or in the UK.
Does the timeline roll into the Lions though? I don't think it does.
No, it doesn't. But there's a lot of South African players getting rugby that if they don't, they won't get those games, will they? And they're playing for the good teams as well, not the Cheetahs and the Kings.
Mm.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see that actually. I don't know. Maybe it will happen. It'll all happen over here, and then it will bleed into the Lions, which I think will also happen over here.
Yeah, I'm scared to say anything else now because I break my duck.
I was really hoping you'd get like Roberto Duran's name wrong or something.
It's always
Duran is his name.
Yeah, I was going to say it's always tempting to call him Roberto Duran. That's the end of that. No more names.
There we go. Good stuff, lads. Really thoroughly enjoyed that. Excellent chat. I mean, God, this time next week we'll be talking about. We'll know whether it's happened or not. But yeah, get in touch with us with your questions throughout the week. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Attacking Scrum. Big thanks to the Mighty Murph. Big thanks to Daniel Killick, and a big thanks to our sponsors at the Attacking Scrum, at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some great quality coffee, as I probably need to do to sharpen up a bit, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. We'll be back with Grand Slam / disappointment reaction, depending on which way it goes next week. Thanks for listening. Podcast Network.